Murat by Alexandre Dumas. On the June 18, 1815, at the very moment when the destiny of Europe was being decided at Waterloo, a man dressed like a beggar was silently following the road from Toulon to Marseilles. Arrived at the entrance of the Gorge of Allioles, he halted on a little eminence from which he could see all the surrounding country. Then either because he had reached the end of his journey, or because, before attempting that forbidding, somber pass which is called the Thermopylae of Provence, he wished to enjoy the magnificent view which spread to the southern horizon a little longer, he went and sat down on the edge of the ditch which bordered the road, turning his back on the mountains, which rise like an amphitheater to the north of the town, and having at his feet a rich plain covered with tropical vegetation, exotics of a conservatory, trees and flowers quite unknown in any other part of France. Beyond this plain, glittering in the last rays of the sun, pale and motionless as a mirror lay the sea, and on the surface of the water glided one brig of war, which, taking advantage of a fresh land breeze, had all sails spread, and was bowling along rapidly, making for Italian seas. The beggar followed it eagerly with his eyes until it disappeared between the Cape of Jean and the first of the islands of Hyres. Then, as the white apparition vanished, he sighed deeply, let his head fall into his hands, and remained motionless and absorbed in his reflections until the tramplings of a cavalcade made him start. He looked up, shook back his long black hair, as if he wished to get rid of the gloomy thoughts which were overwhelming him, and, looking at the entrance to the gorge, from whence the noise came, he soon saw two riders appear, who were no doubt well known to him, for drawing himself up to his full height, he let fall the stick he was carrying, and folding his arms he turned towards them. On their side the newcomers had hardly seen him before they halted, and the foremost dismounted, threw his bridle to his companion, and uncovering, though 50 paces from the man in rags, advanced respectfully towards him. The beggar allowed him to approach with an air of somber dignity, and without a single movement. Then, when he was quite near, "Well, Marshal, have you news for me?" said the beggar. "Yes, sire," said the other sadly. "And what are they?" "Such that I could wish it were anyone but myself to announce them to your majesty." "So the emperor refuses my services? He forgets the victories of Aboukir, Eylau, and Moscow?" "No, sire. But he remembers the Treaty of Naples, the taking of Reggio, and the declaration of war of the Viceroy of Italy." The beggar struck his forehead. "Yes, yes. I dare say he thinks I deserve his reproaches, and yet it seems to me that he ought to remember that there are two men in me, the soldier whom he made his brother, and the brother whom he made a king. Yes, as brother I have treated him ill, very ill, but as king, upon my soul, I could not have acted differently. I had to choose between my sword and my crown, and between a regiment and a people. Listen, Brune, you do not know how it all happened. There was an English fleet, the guns of which were growling in the port, there was a Neapolitan population howling in the streets. If I had been alone, I would have passed through the fleet with one boat, through the crowd with my sword alone, but I had a wife and children. Yet I hesitated. The idea of being called traitor and deserter caused me to shed more tears than the loss of my throne, or perhaps the death of those I love best, will ever wring from me. And so he will have nothing more to do with me? He refuses me as general, captain, private? Then what is left for me to do? Sire, your majesty must leave France immediately. And if I don't obey? My orders are to arrest you and deliver you up to a court-martial. Old comrade, you will not do that. I shall do it, praying God to strike me dead in the moment I lay hands on you. That's you all over, Brune. You have been able to remain a good, loyal fellow. He did not give you a kingdom. He did not encircle your brow with a band of iron, which men call a crown, and which drives one mad. He did not place you between your conscience and your family. So I must leave France, begin my vagabond life again, and say farewell to Toulon, which recalls so many memories to me. See, Brune, continued Murat, leaning on the arm of the marshal, are not the pines yonder as fine as any at the Villa Pamphili, the palms as imposing as any at Cairo, the mountains as grand as any range in the Tyrol? Look to your left, is not Cape Jean something like Castellammare and Sorrento, leaving out Vesuvius? And see, St. Mandrier at the farthest point of the gulf, is it not like my rock of Capri, which Lamarck juggled away so cleverly from that idiot of a Sir Hudson Lowe? My God! And I must leave all this. Is there no way of remaining on this little corner of French ground? Tell me, Brune. You'll break my heart, sire, answered the marshal. Well, we'll say no more about it. What news? The emperor has left Paris to join the army. They must be fighting now. Fighting now and I not there. Oh, I feel I could have been of use to him on this battlefield. How I would have gloried in charging those miserable Prussians and dastardly English. Brun, give me a passport, I'll go at full speed, I'll reach the army, I will make myself known to some colonel, I shall say, give me your regiment. I'll charge at its head, and if the emperor does not clasp my hand tonight, I'll blow my brains out, I swear I will. Do what I ask, Brun, and however it may end.